You're listening to The God Journey, an ever-expanding conversation with those thinking outside the box of organized religion, with your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
Well, we're back here with The God Journey on another podcast. Wayne, what you been up to?
Oh, my goodness. I had an incredible weekend. I accepted an invitation I don't normally accept. It's to a very traditional congregation. In fact, it's kind of a cutting-edge congregation in the city it's in, and it's kind of the hot place to be, and they've got all the programs and things, and fully knowing what I'm about, they invited me to come up and spend a weekend with them.
Oh, that's interesting. What happened?
Well, I'm, those things are awkward for me, because I mean, I want them to know, gee, I'm not in the box. In fact, one of the people said to the man who was inviting me, who's the one of the leaders of this bunch, and she said, "Do you know how far out of the box Wayne really is?" And
did she say that endearingly?
I think so. I called her out later. I told her I was going to fire her from my PR staff, and she said, "I meant that really good." I said, I assumed you did. I've got some great folks I love there. I mean, there's some real out-of-the-box thinkers that are there. In fact, some of the leadership, as we talked through the weekend, the reason I go to places like that at times when I really feel led to is because there's people there that are thinking outside the box, too. They may still be in it in many ways and serving there, some of them, and some just being available. But the heart I found for people, both those, I mean, I taught a regular Saturday night, Sunday morning thing from a stage with bright lights in my eyes. I can't remember the last time I've done that. Not my favorite venue in a long shot. And yet to see the ways that God used that, the emails I've gotten from people, how it's impacted folks, it just reminds me that God's people are everywhere. You can't just say, you know, all of us have gotten out of those things, or all of us even should be out of those things. Because that's not the way God thinks.
You know, I think that's vital to say and reiterate is because I don't think this is about whether you go to church, don't go to church, in the traditional, you know, ways that people think and talk about that. I think, flat out, we are His church. I'm there whether I'm at a service or not at a service. I'm part of His body. And I think the real question is, where is Father leading me?
Yeah.
What is Jesus wanting me to do?
Yeah.
Because I think back to all the years that I spent, you know, pastoring and leading a group of people. I can say this about it. I did it with an absolute sincere devotion to Christ. I was following what He put in front of me as best I understood. And the beauty about the journey that I think He took us on is there were times that I just realized that there was a limitation set in the form and the system in which we were gathering. That this was never going to fully satisfy the longings that He'd placed in there. But that didn't make what we were doing wrong.
No, absolutely. And what I loved about this group of people, there are people asking those questions. Maybe there is a better way to do this. Maybe this is an awful lot of time, investment in machinery that may not be as essential as we think it is. And it's fun to be with people on the cutting edge of those discoveries because we were there once and now other people are there too because God leads to it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we were there once. I sort of feel like that's where Jesus is right now. Is those questions He's placing in the hearts of just about everybody I know. I mean, I got buddies that are still at seminary that, you know, they're thinking through Christianity and the postmodern. I mean, they're using all this highfalutin terminology for the same basic questions as, where is this? Where is God really in the midst of what's going on?
Yeah.
It's just a simple question.
And do I have a story for you? There's somebody I've been dying for you to meet for a long time, and I'd take you to Australia tomorrow if we could figure out a way to do it. But instead of doing that, a couple years ago, I forgot I'd recorded this. We talked about doing a radio show a couple years ago before podcasting was even on the radar screen of anybody.
Oh, yeah, when Salem approached us.
And one of the things about doing that radio show is we were going to interview people I traveled around with, or you did, so that we could. And I remembered we'd done this with Kevin Smith from outside Melbourne, Australia. Kevin has been a good friend of mine for the last 10 years. I met him about 10 years ago. God's allowed our lives to intersect a number of times over that. He's been an older brother to me on this journey. He has helped me see things that have absolutely liberated my life. He happened to be there through the most painful experience of our life when we were spilling out of a group of folks that we had helped to plant and be part of. About 6 months after that, still in the throes of some of that transition when we first met him. And him and the community that lives around their lives outside Melbourne there just touched us so deeply. And I forgot I'd record this interview with him, some of their journey, what they're discovering about church life. And I think this is a story we'd love to share together and have some comments out on the other side.
I'm with Kevin Smith here in the land down under. We're in Benlock, which is in the state of Victoria in southern Australia near Melbourne. Southeastern Australia, I guess you'd say.
Where the rivers run upside down.
Oh, well, I guess that's true from where we are. Anyway, Kevin, I thought we'd have a chance to share with some of our listeners some of the things that you've been through. You were at one point a Baptist minister, I believe.
I was indeed.
And now I hear you said the other day to someone, now you feel like you no longer fit into systems like that. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think I mean by that, to be a Baptist pastor meant fitting into a preconceived way of operating that, even though it wasn't written down in a book, it was a very strong thing that you just knew there were certain things you should do and you shouldn't do. But sometimes the things God called you to do were a little different than the things that tradition or expectations meant you should do. And once you've actually moved past those traditions and those expectations, all of a sudden you find you're free to do what Father says. And in fact, you live in a more dangerous position because the other place was safe. But you're free to be able to follow where Father takes you, which is fruitful, which is exciting.
What were some of those things you began to see that kind of were in conflict with the rules, so to speak?
Well, I suppose the most clear one was just the fact that there was an expectation that people would all meet on Sunday in a certain sort of way. And you know, not to do it didn't matter too much, but people still found a little distress in it. And what I found was that sometimes we got up on Sunday and we didn't feel like meeting with the people of God. Not just feel like it, we had a funny sense we should go and do something altogether different. We couldn't do that because we had a commitment that held us to a building in a place for the day, really.
Well, for many people in our country, that seems to sum up what Christianity is. If you're not in one of those places on Sunday morning at 10 or 10:30, then maybe you are just following yourself instead of following the living God. Have you heard similar accusations down south?
I've heard people say something like that. But I think the thing that you've got to see is that the more you live in relation to Father, the more you realize that you're not doing some religious thing. What you're doing instead is living in an active relationship with someone who's alive and well and has things to say. And in fact, has more things to say than we're ever ready to listen to. And so therefore, when you're walking with him, He impacts all of your life. It's not something that's an add-on, an extra. Like in the university locally here, you can go and do all your work in all the curricular work, but then there's extracurricular clubs like the chocolate eating club or the labour club or the socialist club or whatever else. And the fact is, often Christianity felt like an add-on extra, an extracurricular activity.
So when that changed, how long ago was that, by the way, you felt like you were merging between where you were and where you live now?
Somewhere between 15 and 20 years ago.
Wow, that's a long time.
It feels like a lifetime.
Have you been alone in this, or have other folks journeyed with you?
Others have come and journeyed with us, and also I'd have to say my family and I have been able to walk together, and I have what were, when we started, teenage kids who've now grown up to be adults. And we've journeyed together in the whole process with my wife and I in the process of actually learning some new things about living in the freedom of God, living knowing God, where every decision of the day, from where you brush your teeth to when you sing songs of praise, were to do with the living God.
So did they survive without Sunday schools and youth groups and the like?
Yes, well, a long, long time ago, even before I left the institution, I was in Africa, in Ethiopia, and I was in a valley we couldn't get out of one weekend, and I went to a church where people spoke in languages I couldn't understand and they weren't speaking in tongues. And basically I watched a community of people where the kids had this infectious love for being together with the brothers and sisters. So when the missionary came back, I said, "Can you ask one of the elders here, what is it that makes these kids so excited?" And he said, he talked away and he came back and he said, "Well, the children have always learnt that actually you catch the knowledge of God." And I began to think about that and think, you know, my children never learnt to know their auntie by reading about her in a book or being taught about her. Same way that one and one make two. But they got to know her, and over a period of years, the reality of who she was, even before they had the conscious ability to identify her, they knew she was, and they just grew with her. And in growing with her, they lived in relationship with her, and they still love her today. And I think that's what it's like with Jesus.
Two objections seem to kind of ride with this kind of thinking with people. Number one, if you're not linked to one of those things we call church, one denomination or tradition, then you're really not connected at all, and you're kind of unsubmitted or rebellious, or you're just independent.
Well, you may be. You may be any of those things, but primarily the most important thing is that you're connected to Jesus. Because, you see, I believe that sort of argument, it's true that people are rebellious and those sorts of things, but a person can be very ordinary and unrebellious, quite submitted to God and do this, and it's not really a matter of doing their own thing. If they're doing that, that's not godly at all. But if they are actually doing what Jesus calls them to do, then the whole thing's different, because they begin to see that he's alive and he's real. Now, I believe one of the problems is we often don't believe he is there. And I think, you know, we often live as though the heathen are right. There's no one you can believe out there. And, of course, that's not true.
Right.
The God of the Bible is wonderfully present. You go and talk to him and he answers you. You expect that he'll show you what he wants. And then you might even mess up in the process, and he's great at forgiving.
Wow, isn't that something? Then we can really trust Jesus to walk us through the real experiences of our lives and keep us safe from falling into error or heresy.
Oh, absolutely.
By just loving him.
Yeah, and in practical things. I mean, Jesus will teach you how, if you go to him, about everything that you've got to do with money or with relationships. You can say, Lord, what do I do here? And he will show you. And you act on it and you think, good heavens, this is wonderful.
Wow, that's great. And the other direction, I guess, is people saying, well, then if people go to one of those things that you call clubs or in our culture, we sometimes call churches on Sunday morning, are they wrong? Are they missing it?
No, they're part of an ongoing process of God breaking out in his church. And really, it doesn't matter where you're linked to the people of God. If the key is your link is with Jesus, where you are is absolutely incidental to the relationship. That is to say, your relationship with Jesus can grow in any one of those places. There'll be things that will make it difficult in some of them, but in actual fact, a relationship with the Father through the Son is something that just impacts people's lives. And the danger, of course, is if I'm part of a club and I get to know Jesus that way, I'll often find that the things that happen in the club make me feel compromised in my friendship with Jesus. And at that point, I have to separate myself from those things, not from the people.
Right.
But most probably from some of the institutional things and from the spirit that's behind it.
Yeah. So that doesn't mean you necessarily walk alone, though. It's just not you and your family living out in the bush somewhere.
No, no. In fact, what happens is God keeps bringing people to you. Like there's two Yankee blokes who turned up on our doorstep and have blessed our life. They're here for a week or two, and it's wonderful.
And we've had a great time, too.
And then there's another guy turns up from Western Australia, and he's a brother who brings input to our life. And then there's another lady from down in Melbourne. She comes in, and there's a whole lot of us who live near each other, who know each other. And then on top of that, we have this link with other Christians who are part of different groups and clubs and denominations who love Jesus, and they put aside their denominational stuff and their churchy stuff, and they just know each other. They know us, and we know them. And that's a rich thing.
Now, I know you gather together once in a while. Maybe some would say irregularly. But we've noticed living here this week with y'all is that you guys are just in an ongoing conversation. It kind of filters into where you work and where you pass each other on the street.
Yeah.
And there's just this ongoing conversation of what it is to know God and follow him.
Absolutely. And it's a rich, the richness of a corporate life. And it doesn't mean we live near each other. Actually, we often live, well, I suppose some of us live at least 10 miles apart. But in actual fact, there's a relationship that exists that means we're brothers and sisters together. And so there's people all the time ringing each other up or seeing each other or dropping in or giving someone a hand or inviting themselves to tea or to supper, as you would say.
And we would say, yes, we're learning all the
well,
terminology.
I'm learning
here.
Your jargon. And so there's an ongoing process of people sharing their life. And we've actually got between the 10 of our homes, we've got a two-way radio service, so we can just talk, and it's a little bit like standing around the village pub having a yarn about things. And so
having a yarn, does that mean you're knitting something?
Talking
together,
having a discussion,
or a bit of a natter. I've heard
a bit of a natter. That's another way of saying the same thing.
Okay,
but I hope you can understand the Australian English.
We're getting through to it.
But it's, there's a richness in that, and it seems to me that that's what happened in the Acts of the Apostles. They seem to keep on going, breaking bread and visiting each other's houses, and breaking bread, I'm certain, wasn't a matter of having a communion service. That may have been part of it, but the thing that it was doing was having a meal together. And I really believe that we've learnt that it's worthwhile being inconvenienced in our life to have a meal together for the richness that comes. That sometimes means that, you know, our children can't be involved in some of the things they'd like to be involved in. But after a while, the richness of relationship with people of all ages actually just makes irrelevant the Boy Scouts or whatever else that people have been involved in. And in fact, my kids, when they were young, they used to hurry home and they used to sort of do their homework from school on the way so that when they got home they could involve themselves in the life of the community. And the worst discipline in our household was to say to my son, you can't go to church on Sunday.
Wow. That'd be quite a switch, wouldn't it? If someone's listening to this and saying, man, I might be doing what I call going to church for week on end, months on end, and I'm hungry for a deeper relationship, something that connects me in a real way with him and with people, what would some of the things you might kind of help them out first thing start out?
Well, you know what I do? I'd say, if that's what you want, go for a walk and tell God what you want. Go out for a walk somewhere where you, I mean, people use the word pray. Well, I don't use the word too much because it seems to me it's got an idea of saying gentle Jesus, meek and mild, or, you know, a form prayer. Don't do that. The living God's alive and vibrant and desiring to hear people he created talk to him, and especially people he's made his own. So that I say to people, look, if you feel like that, just go for a walk and tell Jesus that's what you want.
And you mean talk out loud?
Oh, yeah. Because prayer is never thought. It's always spoken. So speak it out. In the Bible, there's not one case of thought-out prayer, only spoken prayer.
What if I don't know how to start and talk to God? Some people just say, that's for somebody else to do. I don't know how.
Well, I think that if you can actually say, Mum, pass the bread and butter, you've got enough vocabulary to be able to talk to God. It's the same thing. You just treat God with the great respect he deserves as the creator and sustainer of the universe. And you talk to him and say, Father, this is how it is. He is your father and he cares for you like mad. And one might say he's just so desirous of his children talking to him. We like it when our kids talk to us about things. I love it when my kids say, we've got a problem, Dad. What can we do here? I love to sit down and say, let's see what we can work out together. I think Father loves it even more than we do. And he likes it when you come to him and say, I sometimes find that when I feel exasperated, I'll say, God, I don't even want to talk to you today. And you know the funny thing? When I say that, I often feel like talking all the more. Because to confess that to him and say, that's how I feel, really unpacks some of the turmoil in me. And then I'm able to go on and talk to him and say, well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that to you. Because really, I can see this and this and this. And I don't know what to do about that. And he says, I walk along and ideas drop into my mind, pictures and visions and things, and they give me an impression of what he's saying to me. And then I find that it really fits in with what the Bible says, and I feel very much at home.
Wow.
And in fact, I find that what he shows me is absolutely so important. It's not because I'm special. It's his mind for all his creation. Now, I can't understand that. How can the God who made everyone that exists with the countless billions of people on the earth say, you can talk to me, it's all right. I've got time to listen to you now. You say, but how do you listen to him all at once? I don't know the answer.
But somehow he does.
He does.
And he doesn't just listen. What you're saying is there's actually things begin to happen. You begin to see things, feel things, sense things.
Absolutely.
And if you follow through on them, then some amazing doors open up,
exactly,
I guess.
Exactly right. You see the reality of it. See, sometimes an idea will come that says, you know, I'll often be walking on the street and I'll be thinking about something and just think, I'll pray and say, well, Lord, I was just thinking about Mary. I wonder what's happening to Mary. And I sense God says, go and give her a ring. So the first call box I come to, I go in and I give her a ring and say, Mary, how are you? And time after time, Mary will say, oh, it's so good that you rang. It's just the right time. You say, isn't that interesting? Well, don't blame me. It was most probably Father.
Wow, isn't that good? And so 19 years out now, you've been living this way with a group of folks. Are you finding others more than just, say, the group that left the place you were at? Are you finding others who are enjoying this journey with
Wherever
you?
Wherever we go, we find there's people who, for different reasons, have swung around to walk with Jesus in ways that have been quite different to the way they've ever walked before. And it looks a bit like they've judged where they've come and said, well, you guys aren't any good, but they're not saying that. Rather, they're saying, we've got a funny idea, Jesus is calling us this way, so we're going to follow him. And come with us if you like, but don't worry if you don't want to. I'll leave you in God's hands. He'll look after you.
It would be true, I think, that sometimes being involved in some kind of structured religious experience oftentimes takes the need away or gives us a false sense of security.
Oh,
so we really
yes.
don't need Jesus like you're talking about. If he comes, great. If he doesn't, I've got plenty of other things to do anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, in a way, the dilemma is that religious experiences are often just that. Religious experiences, they come and go, and they do mask the reality of a real friendship with someone who's the creator of the universe. And, you know, I mean, fancy actually having a painted doll when you get to have a beautiful wife.
Wow. That would be a difference.
Quite a difference.
Yeah, that's great. And one other thing I thought might be helpful for some of us to consider, you talked briefly about it, to share the life of God with people.
Mm.
You really have to make some room in your life, don't you? I think Americans particularly will talk about how busy we are. We're a 10-hour day. We get home. We've got two income wage earners out there, particularly living in the Los Angeles basin near where we live. By the time they get their kids to all the soccer matches and after-school activities and all that, then there's very little time to really build relationships. So even in a world that's connected with cell phones and email and all these kinds of things, we really are a pretty disjointed society. And even a lot of established congregations who've tried house church or cell church kinds of programs find that they rarely work in America because people just don't find the time to get to know each other.
Sure. And really, that's the key, isn't it? You've really got to make a decision in your life that says, I'm going to actually create a moratorium on all my activity for a few months. I advocate this to people and say, look, give it a go. Just cut off all the extra things you do. You've got to go to work, maybe. Well, go to work and do it. Even that you've got to ask questions about, because sometimes we actually have far too much money than we need stacked away, and we might be worried about it for our retirement or something, but actually God says, I'm the one who provides for you. You don't have to worry. So it may well be that you might take a week off and go and quietly sit in the bush somewhere and just talk to God and talk to some people around you.
Well, we met a man this week that, what, you said works 3 days a week because he doesn't want to make more money than that, and even volunteers work at some other places, but without the money because it would complicate his life.
That's right. Well, he sees that he's a man who could make a lot of money, but he's chosen not to because he has a sense God said to him, care about people. And even with things like we had a special meeting today that he was going to come to, but his next-door neighbour died and he went to her funeral to support her husband. And that's typical, because he says, I'm prepared to put myself out to glorify God and to minister Christ to other people. And look, if I really care about ministering Christ, I will find ways and means. Whatever you want to do, you'll do. If someone says, here's a way you can make $1,000 and you haven't got one more minute in the day, you'll find a minute.
Isn't that something?
It is.
And so Jesus, I guess, really is big enough to take care of his church? Could you say it that way?
Yes, absolutely. To be honest, what else is there?
And you see the church not as what building you go to or what group you belong to, but everyone. How would you define church?
Oh, well, that's the greatest lie of all time, that the church is a building, or the church is an organization, or a church is even a group of people. Actually, the church is the ecclesia of God. It's a Greek word that talks about a group of people who have been called together by another one. You know, it's like when I was a kid at school, they used to pick a team to play against another team, and they'd pick your name and you'd say, I'm on their side now. And when you're picked on someone's side, all of a sudden you're part of that whole group. And you know the support, and you know the place you can put something into, and you can live your life. And I forgot where the questions come from.
Just defining church.
Oh, that's right, defining church. But it seems to me that we've been called to be a people who know Jesus, and because we know Jesus, actually we'll know others. And our friendship won't be based on how well we can actually have a relationship together. We won't need to go and do some sort of psychological thing to make it happen. Rather, we'll be surprised by the fact we find ourselves living like brothers and sisters without even trying.
And so then our identity is not going to be Baptist, Foursquare, Lutheran, Catholic. It's really going to be,
Jesus
belong to him
alone.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the problems of putting a name on something is it often gets a meaning of its own. And so their people then think of themselves as a Foursquare or a Baptist or an Anglican or whatever, or a Lutheran or whatever, when in actual fact, Christ is all in all. Paul said that to the church in Ephesus. He said, yeah, Christ is all in all. He's the lot. And I reckon that I want to say to people, I'm just Jesus's bloke.
And as you say over here, there it is.
There it is.
Not a better way to end than that. Kevin, thank you for your time, letting us chat a bit with you. It's been a joy to be in your home this last week or so. And we pray all the best as God continues to lead you further down his journey.
Thank you.
Man, was that ever a meaty little interview? He said some incredible stuff.
Oh, wouldn't you love to take every sentence and just go back and parse out a little bit?
That's the old pastor in you.
Well, then may I be forgiven and cleansed. I so enjoy how he looks at the life of the church, how Jesus invites us to himself, and that's really the issue. It's not where you go or what you're doing.
I think both of us looked at each other at one point when he said the richness of a corporate life. And I just, the way he said it and just everything that was surrounding it was, yeah, I think that's what we're longing for. And I think that's what Jesus is longing for us to enter into and experience, is that there is a richness in a corporate life. I don't want just my life. That's why I accepted Jesus' life. I've seen my life. I don't want my life. I want his life. And to be able to find that, discover that, and see that being lived out in the lives of others, that is just a neat story to be able to hear the freedom that Kevin and the community that they're talking about, that they found. I mean, two-way radios in their houses so that they can, beyond geography, you sort of figure it's like, this is church all of the tin cans and the strings across the neighborhood. It's like, there's something playful and wonderful in just the fact that, you know what? Those people have a passion to remain in relationship. They're intentional about it.
Yeah, and they live out in the bush. So part of that is, you know, somebody's going into Melbourne to get something, and 15 other people will tell them, well, can you get this for me? Can you get this for me? Then they come back and everybody knows, your stuff's at my house. Come and get it and pay for it. I mean, they live out community in those very practical ways. A bunch of the men volunteered for the fire department, the volunteer fire department out there, to be part of the community and serve and love. And this was a group that had been part of a Baptist club 20-some-odd years ago. And it had all the rigors of just a normal thing.
Did they call it a club?
Oh, no. They called it a church back then.
Just checking.
Yeah, it's just
I thought that'd be refreshingly honest.
Well, it would be. But obviously, we think those things are the church when we're there, and we forget that the church is people, and the church is all God's family in the world, not just my particular version of it. Their transformation, the details aren't there. There was a book published a number of years ago called I Will Build My Church from there, and tells the story of, I mean, the staff, all the employed staff that were quote-unquote ministry people went off staff at one point as God was leading them, and they hired a doctor, a mechanic, and a handyman to be the church staff to serve the single moms, widows, and orphans, as we talked about in our last podcast. That was the church staff, just people available to help needy folks in the area get some things put together.
Wow, that alone would be incredibly helpful.
And then they just kept decentralizing into there, into a series of household communities now that are just God's people living together. Very similar to the Ladysmith story, though very different circumstantially. What I liked in the beginning part of what he was talking about, there's this real difference between our preconceived ways of doing things, almost by ritual, and our obedience to Christ. Sometimes we wake up on Sunday morning and God doesn't want us there. I mean,
that's hard when you're a pastor.
15 years ago, I think I would have blanked out that part of it. But I know it's true now. I know there's things that Sarah and I get caught up in on Sundays now that we wouldn't have when our whole Sunday was blocked out doing, you know, a certain kind of expectation that had to be there. And he did talk about those things being safer, and there's a danger to living. And I think the danger of living to Father, it feels dangerous because it kicks out the prophet. There's no safer place to be than simply listening and learning to live by every word that God gives, and not by just rituals and formulas that we've learned as Christian.
I remember you suggested I read a book entitled Dangerous Wonder by Mike Iaconelli, and just the title alone captures, I think, some of the essence of what you're highlighting, is the fact that, you know, yeah, this is not safe. This is not mundane and predictable. And frankly, there's a comfort in that for a lot. You know, this is what we do. This is our routine. This is our set of tradition. This is how we know how to do it. And it does seem like Jesus has a real passion and desire to kind of just mess with that in a glorious way that says, well, if you thought that was nice, let me teach a whole different way to live life. No, it's not safe and mundane, but boy, is it full of wonder.
One of the things Kevin asked me is, as we were going through some of our transition, he asked me when we were part of a more traditional congregation, he said, Wayne, how much of the things that you did among that group and the policies you set and the programming was really driven by your fear that someone would be left out, someone would fall through the cracks, someone would go off in error? I said, what do you mean? Probably 90%. I mean, why else do you have rules and rituals and policies? And he said, the 90% of what you saw in the church was based on fear, not trust.
Wow.
That was eye-opening to me.
Yeah.
Because, and my whole journey has been that way. Most of my stuff prior to about 10, 12 years ago, when God began to really pull me aside and do some fresh things in my life, was it really was not that I trusted God to do, but because I didn't trust Him to do, I was having to do, you know, my agenda and manipulating people and all that. And part of my first, my initial times with Kevin, I told Sarah this, every time I'd come away from some time with Kevin, I felt like my trust meter in God would be pegged. It was just, man, it was so easy for the next few weeks just to trust that all these things are in Father's hands and He'll sort it out. And then somehow that got eaten away by the reality of, I mean, because that was beyond where I had grown. But over the years that I've known Kevin, I have just seen my ability to live in trust with Father's love and care for me just grow. And the last time I was with him, we had a great time of fellowship. I was like 2 years ago when I did this interview. But I told Sarah when I came back, I don't feel like my trust meter got pegged this time. You know, I felt like that God had done enough work in my heart that He and I were on a similar page now in this growing of trust. And He's helped me live that. He has helped me in so many ways, whether it's God's provision for my life when I don't really have any kind of recognizable salary or income stream to opportunities God would give in writing or sharing with other people. Instead of me manipulating all that, just sitting back and saying, I'm just going to do what God puts on my heart to do. I'm just going to follow Him. I'm not going to do what I do because I'm afraid He won't. I'm going to do what I do when I clearly see what He has in mind for me.
It seems like so much of our energy spent to try to control or manipulate things really does kind of come out of the whole fear realm of not trusting that somehow Father is at work or that Father knows my circumstance and is at work in that. If I can't readily identify what it is, it's like, well, I better do something. And it's like, you know, just think of how many things are born out of the impatience and the fear of those moments that, you know, we then have to live with.
And well, religion, I think, exploits that fear. Rather than religion freeing you from fear and saying, hey, Jesus is big enough to trust. Jesus is big enough to take care of your life. Father can do that. It teaches you, you can't survive out there without us. You need to be here. You need, if not, that's where Jim Jones gets started and all these heretical things. And the fact is, all the heretical things come out of big groups of people gathered together and power centers. The fact is, we have not, I remember that, teaching people, you need the body. You need to be here. You need, if not, you're... And what we're really teaching people is Jesus can't take care of you. And even people who listen to this, I hear from people that listen to this podcast all the time. Some saying, this is my only source of fellowship. I don't know anybody where I live that thinks like what you guys are talking about. And there's almost a frantic search to find it instead of, let's trust Jesus with that too. Let's not have to find something. Let's ask Him, like Kevin said, tell Him what you want. Go for a walk. And say, Father, I'd like to meet some brothers and sisters on this journey. And then keep living in Him, watching for how He might do that. But you don't need this frantic, got to run to every group, everything you hear about in town, trying to find somebody to share this life with. Jesus knows how to set you in the family. And if you follow Him, He will.
Yeah, I mean, there's something that is relaxing in listening to some of, I think, you know, the key things that He was bringing forth. Because it isn't so complex. It's like, well, you know, well, maybe I'm not real good at praying. Can you say Mom passed the bread? It's like, you know,
yeah. It was Mom passed the bread. Those are flowers here in the States.
Oh.
That Mom, but it didn't mean Mom.
But the whole dynamic of simply just going like, you know, talk to Him.
Absolutely.
Begin a conversation. I think the simplicity of beginning to just walk this thing out one step at a time, that you don't really graduate from that is what I'm coming to realize. Is I don't really move on from this being one step after another where I am entrusting myself to the Father's care. And I think what is exciting is, to my own delight, I'm finding a peacefulness and a confidence, a restfulness in the knowledge that is not so much an emotional high produced from any event, but more the quiet reality of just knowing that, you know what? I'm being watched right now. Father sees me.
by a loving father, not being watched by the CIA.
Well, you're being watched.
Neil, we've been watching you.
We used to sing that song in Sunday school, "Be careful of lies, what you see for the Father up above," you know, and you're just thinking, God's this divine, slap you upside the head for fooling around. But he really talked about, which I think this is where we have to get to if we're going to really experience life in Christ, and that is, this is an active relationship that impacts all of your life. This is not something you can go to a meeting and celebrate only, or you know, confine it to a devotional time in the morning or a meeting time with other Christians. This relationship with Father is part of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's part of who I meet for lunch, where I recreate, listening to Him, doing what He puts on my heart, and watching the glory of that unfold in ways I could never fathom.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have time to unfold all of this, but one of the things that just totally blew my mind in listening to this interview was the reality that, you know, these people weren't serving the almighty dollar. They were purposely not making more so that they might care for people. And the whole idea of purposely putting time in life where they're not just frantically busied out with work demands, but they actually had life that they could share. It wasn't all quantified and already committed to. They made time. They said no to a lot of other things and said, we're going to be focused on this one thing, which is we're going to share our lives with each other. We're going to be intentional about doing that. You know, I just think of the traditional American culture just going like, how on its ear would it throw that? I mean, everyone's frantically rushing about, and you sit like, doing what?
Yeah.
Why are we so busy?
Yeah. Trying to provide all the activities for our kids, trying to chase the almighty dollar. That whole, and this is something we will talk about down the road, this serving God or mammon. You really can't do both. You can't. Ugh. Can't get God to serve your need for mammon. It really is. We're either going to follow what Jesus puts in our lives, or we're going to chase after either personal validation or financial security, or we're going to chase those things. And they are two different realities. But you're right. That's probably more than we want to unpack in this podcast. These folks will be here for hours to come.
Well, I just think it's fantastic to be able to hear, I think, some insights from a seasoned brother in the journey that's just enjoying walking this out, and is obviously, you know, you've had a chance to witness this, walking this out with a bunch of other brothers and sisters who sounds like they're experiencing the same, if not more.
Absolutely. And one of the great joys of this is we held out part of some of the best parts of this interview as he talked about kids and how our life in God impacts children. We just felt like there was so much there that we wanted to unpack, that we wanted to give a show to it up the road. So we'll still have a little more Kevin Smith to look forward to up the road and their kind of view of kids and how kids catch this journey. And it's incredibly thought-provoking. So I don't know that we'll do it next. Probably not. But up the road here, a few podcasts.
That'll be fantastic.
Take a look at it.
Hey, there's some other stuff blowing in the wind.
What? Oh, no. What's that?
Well, you wanted to mention the whole Barna thing and what's beginning to happen.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of email about Barna's, George Barna's new book, Revolution. Brad and I had some heads up on it a few months back. Really talking, some of the statistics it talks about is right now 30% of committed believers, and this is pretty much like American statistics in America, do not regularly now attend a Sunday morning event. Those are not just, you know, Christmas, Easter Christians. Those are committed folks that are just saying, it doesn't work for me anymore. And 70% do attend. And Barna's assertion, I'm not sure he gets it because we haven't seen the book yet, but his assertion is that in 20 years, those numbers will directly flip-flop. 70% of committed believers won't be. They'll be finding other ways to live out this journey than in those traditional congregational environments. And only 30% will still be there. He calls it a revolution. He talks about the revolutionaries that are involved in this kind of thing. So look for the book. It'll be coming out soon if you want to check it out. We'll talk about it down the road, but we thought we'd like to have a little more information on it before we talk about it here.
Yeah, I talked with one of his assistants a little early on, and you know they initially went after this whole study with a sense of somewhat of alarm, going like, gosh, church attendance is declining. And they sort of thought, oh my gosh, what's wrong? And what they discovered is very little is wrong. The people that they are afraid are no longer there. They haven't left Jesus. They haven't backslidden. In fact, their appetite for God has exceeded what was being provided in many of the local church realms, and they're finding that these people's lives are thrilled. They're hungry for God. They're pursuing Him,
and they're growing.
And they were surprised. They were surprised with that. And so, I mean, I'll be curious to see what is in the book. But you know, I certainly think that with Barna being perhaps the most quoted, person in the Christian community out there, I do think this is going to have some little waves, so to speak, to the church's boat.
So you'll be hearing a lot more about it, and if you'd like to correspond with us about it, give us some of your thoughts as we get close to pulling a show together on that, please let us know at thegodjourney.com. Either respond to the blog or the email, or again, our question comment line. If you've read a piece of the book, some of you, understand, got some bits of it at a recent convention, you're welcome to call our comment line at 805-626-4212 and give us your thoughts or observations or insights. That's 805-626-4212. Oh man, it's been fun. I tell you, I just have loved this interview with Kevin, and I love what it encourages in me to get on this week and live a little more freely in the life of the Father, and maybe a little more dangerously.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like more information about this webcast or would like to join in the conversation, you can find out more at thegodjourney.com. It's our hope that this webcast will help us all recognize God as He really is in the reality of our own lives.